Marcus Bridgewater, what's up, dude?
What is up, Rob? How is it going?
Man, I'm so excited to talk to you. I will go ahead and let everybody know, as I do off the bat on this show, my relationship to the guest today, my excitement level is very high for a number of reasons will become evident before you know it. But I don't know this guy at all. I don't know anything about him. I've recently heard about him. Our dear mutual friend, Catherine, who did the show recently, kind of hooked this up, which I'm so excited about. I have a rule on this show where when I talk to somebody new, I do what I call a splash of research. I don't do anything deep. I don't want to know any because I want to get to know you right now. But I do a splash of research. I take a peek, you know, just real quick. And just from what I saw, I like cannot wait to get into this dude. So Marcus Bridgewater, but you're going by Garden Marcus pretty heavily these days. And I think anyone who's watching this episode, and I say that too, that's my last little note here. If you are listening to this episode, I'm going to remind you right now that this episode is available in video on Spotify and YouTube. And this is one I think you're going to want to see because he's got quite the setup. It's not just somebody's apartment over here.
No.
The Garden Marcus theme is on.
Yeah, you know, it's funny to hear it said that way. I am Marcus Bridgewater, and I think I do go by Marcus Bridgewater primarily. You know, a lot of people know me as Garden Marcus, but I don't know that I would introduce myself as Garden Marcus in the grocery store. Hi, I'm Garden Marcus.
Right. I feel like it's almost like a stage name, right? It's when you're doing that stuff, that's who you are. But you are a person at the end of the day.
And what's crazy, what's really unbelievable about the Garden Marcus experience has been it is the manifestation of a thought process, a philosophy of choice making. So kindness, patience, positivity, that is the one of the backbones of the choice forward lifestyle. And Choice Forward is my company. Garden Marcus is the embodiment of the philosophy that helps share the concepts of the company. Most people just don't know that. They just like the Garden Marcus. So it's working. Right. And when people who really like it look in deeper and they find Choice Forward, it's like, oh, there's a gem behind this thing. So it's been a blessing. And I feel blessed because I, Marcus Bridgewater, have been the conduit of all of these things. So,
right. It's not a part you play, but it is at the same time. Like, right. I respect that, man. And I spent a lot of time in my adult life doing like stand-up comedy and that whole notion of like, it's me, but it's not me. But like, right. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's,
absolutely.
And
absolutely.
if you don't have any of that in your life, like if you don't have like a, maybe you're a novelist, you've got a pen name and like, that's you, that's how you keep it separate. I think, it's hard to relate to people when they're like, but your name's Marcus. You're like, I know, but it's not the same.
Oh, no, it's not. And at the same time, to make it easy, I've just leaned into the fact that I am a plant enthusiast. Marcus Bridgewater is a plant enthusiast. If my wife, Dana, hadn't encouraged me to change my Instagram name to Garden Marcus, Garden Marcus would never have existed. It's like Garden Marcus is just a thing that came out of her imagination to explain what I already was, to make it easier for other people to interact with me and appreciate it.
That's a really helpful tool that I think sometimes artists are hesitant to do because they want to assign their own identity to their work so strongly. They're hesitant to have like a stage name or a persona or like, and I always, when I talk to people who struggle with that, comedians are a big group of those people. I point them towards hip hop in a lot of different ways. For me personally, I love listening to Marshall Mathers talk about who Slim Shady is, to hear Sean Carter talk about who Jay-Z is.
Right.
Those distinctions, even like, Dave Bird, Lil Dicky, like even people like you hear them articulate that difference between the persona and then who they walk around in, because I think the biggest thing, and this is what I want to get your take on before I kind of jump back to my usual starter question here, is there is an expectation when those people walk up How does that conflict with you so far in your experience between, is there a conflict there, or are you like just happy to be who they expect you to be? Like, what's that relationship been like for you so far?
You know, so man, that's really, really a good question. And I'm going to answer it in a really heady way. So I hope you're ready for it.
Okay? I'll take it. Yeah, I love this.
There is a way to live life with expectation. But the more you live life with expectation, the more you're likely to be disappointed, right? So for me, it's standard versus expectation. I just try and live my life with a standard, right? So anytime I go outside, I want to be my best self as I interact with my community. As in, and who is my community? Literally any person that I cross, right? And I write about that in my book. Literally, we are all members of the same community because we share resources. So with that in mind, right, going back to the kindness, patience, positivity, I try my darndest to be kind, patient, and positive to everyone I meet every single time. I might be having a really bad day, bro. Super bad. I might have just crossed some real nonsense, ignorance, and bias of this lifetime. But I'm still going to try and meet the next person with kindness, patience, and positivity. So I talk about that through Garden Marcus, right? And I share life lessons through the garden with Garden Marcus about those things. So when people come to meet me, they get that and they're happy. Yay! At the same time, I recognize that I am not trying to meet their expectation. I'm simply living by the highest standard I can. And right. that matches with my persona that I've created. When the person is having a hard time, or the person has some sort of expectation how it's supposed to go, which has happened a few times, I remind them to calm down and to just give me a high five. And then I'm not judging them. Like a lot of this, like, oh my gosh, I was supposed to do, oh no, I'm sorry, I'm messing this up. It's like, no, I'm not messing anything up. I'm still happy to meet you. High five. Don't judge yourself.
Right.
There's no need to be disappointed about the experience. So that's how it has met for me in public. There's times where I find that I'm like, oh, this is a time for a human experience.
Right. I think that open-mindedness is so clear in the way that you speak about this, that community mindset is where you're coming from. And I think that's clear in what little content I've digested of yours so far. And I started following you on everything. So now I'm excited to dive in. I am. I'm not just kissing ass because we're going to get to why I'm excited about it in a minute. Cause I got a special relationship to gardening and plants and stuff. We get to all that. So let's start with this real quick. Where are you from, my guy?
So I'm originally from a small place called Zellwood. Okay.
Okay.
My mom is from St. Kitts, and we didn't settle down anywhere in the States until we found Zellwood, Florida, which is about 35 miles north of Orlando.
All right. Got it. And then did you migrate much after that, or were you there like all the way through high school?
So I lived with my grandma till I was, let's say, 10, 11. Then me and my mom moved to our own space in Plymouth, like about 5 minutes up the road.
Okay.
And then for high school, I actually went to high school on the other side of town in a place called Dr. Phillips versus going to the Apopka High School. So that meant that I had to wake up and catch my bus, I kid you not, at 3:50 in the morning to get there on time. And so there was times where, you know, I'd be exhausted because it's a 3.5-4 hour bus ride. School starts at 7:45.
Is that a private school?
No, it was. I was the last year for the public busing to magnet schools. It was the very last year.
Got it. I had a similar experience with middle school where I lived one street away from being able to take the bus. So I had no choice but to get to school on foot 2 miles every morning and every afternoon back and forth. But you know what? I was on Adderall at the time due to my parents' suggestion and the doctor's. So it helped a little bit, but it was definitely a long trek.
Worked out before you got to school.
Yeah. Just, you know, before I knew it, a mile and a half was done. It was an effective system, but at the end of the day, I remember telling my dad, I was like, maybe next time check the radius. And it was one street.
Right.
So,
They cut the busing for me in between my sophomore and junior year. Luckily, mm-hmm. that was the same year I turned 16. So I started driving to high school after that. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to go to the same high school. And then from there, you know, I left and went to North Carolina. So I skipped around a lot when I was a kid. It started with going to school almost 40 miles away from home for high school, and then going to college another several hundred miles away from home.
So when did you get into the whole theater thing? Because you had to have been doing some of that to end up at School of the Arts, yeah?
Yeah, you know, theater really came to me in middle school. My middle school teacher suggested I join the show because of our improv class. We had improv sessions inside of drama class. Made him say I should come to drama club after school.
Okay. And,
I was Bob Cratchit in
The Christmas Carol.
And oh my goodness, what a great experience that was. And it reminded me of the plays I had done before that. I was Chuck Wagon Chuck and Pecos Bill in fifth grade. And so I was like, oh, man. And I was the Beast in third grade in Beauty and the Beast. But those were like really small plays. It wasn't like middle school's play was like a big deal.
Yeah. So
he then encouraged me to go to the magnet program. And from there, I, you know, did acting and technical direction. And from there, it was like, okay, what do I want to go to school for? And I could go down two tracks because I did, for high school, I did what most people never do. And I spent all my time at school. So much so that I was the lead in my senior play, Raisin in the Sun. I was Walter Lee, but I was also the technical director. And that was because I did a lot of stuff. So yes, you can understand be that guy. Like, you're so dedicated. Theater was my everything. And then when it came time to going to school, I realized I was like, oh, I really want to learn the language of construction. Like, I really want to know the engineering behind it all. And so I leaned into that versus the acting. And that's what took me to North Carolina School of the Arts, because their program was unbelievable.
Oh, absolutely.
Hadn't seen anything like it at the time.
And I wish people had come. I grew up in Texas myself, in Austin for the most part. And for me, it was really tough to be in a very artsy town that had a lot of theater kind of community stuff to do. But when it came to going to public high school in Austin, and maybe other people had different experiences in Texas, but most of the people I talked to, unless you had a very specific relationship to a School of the Arts or a SMU or a Carnegie Mellon or something, like a person who came to your school and let you know those things existed.
Yeah.
It was like, you get out of high school, and Florida is kind of a weird exception because they do have all those crazy good art schools and different things that are access points. But you graduate high school and you're really good at like technical theater, and no one knows what to tell you to do other than to go get a general liberal arts theater degree at whatever state school you can afford or get into, and then maybe come back and be the technical director of that theater program at that high school. No one is like, you know, you could make a career out of this in a really serious way. That access point doesn't really exist for too many kids, I don't feel like, which is such a drag.
I agree. Even though there's, you know, when you think of thespians and you think of like how massive of a program that is across the country.
Right.
It's so surprising that not the same level of thoroughness inside of theater that there is inside of, let's say, the recruitment of sports.
Sports.
I'd say that in that parallel, because, you know, arts and athletics have been at odds for a really long time.
Of course.
In many ways, what has happened to arts is very dark on multiple scales, mind, body, and spirit, compared to what's happened to athletics. Also, somewhat dark. But I only say that from the lens of thinking about if we were doing things so that they actually pushed us to change, to better ourselves, but yielded a product of a more peaceful, a more balanced, a more harmonious human being.
Yeah.
That's not what is happening as a product through arts or athletics. So that's something that society has to look at large at some point. But when we narrow down where priorities have been placed, I think that athletics took priority over arts, especially because emotion as a conduit tool for teaching became muddled, and it stopped having any discipline drawn to it. So when there was discipline able to be applied, well, that's where structure came in, and that's
correct.
Where money can be invested.
Right.
So what that meant is, I think over time, decades later, the arts are not nearly as respected as athletics. So they've not had the same kind of investment. So that's
my thought. You're the number one quarterback in your football team in high school in Texas, I guarantee you almost no one comes up to you and goes, "So what's your backup plan?"
Right.
No, they're like, "Good luck, bro. I hope they make it. I know it's slim, quarterback in the NFL. That's tough. You got your college years ahead of you, bro, but I'm sure you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. Great. Congrats." No, there is none of that for the best actor in the school or the best technical director who's also the best actor in the school. You know what I mean? Like, they don't do that. They come to you and they go, "Oh man, that was amazing. Here's your roses. Here's your blah, blah, blah. You built a set too? Crazy. So what's your backup plan? Like, what are you going to do if you mess this up?" Like, bro, how good do I have to be at what? I love that. Okay. So here's a follow-up. I'm so excited to ask you this because everything you just said kind of leads up to this thing I talk about on this show. I probably brought it up like 3 or 4 times and I call it my Christmas Carol question.
Okay.
It is a specific example of a much broader thing about art that I'm so interested to hear your particular perspective on. Okay. So obviously the lesson that's built into a Christmas Carol, so obviously, is don't be greedy. Don't be greedy. You know, spread your stuff. It's simple. It's a long story.
Okay,
the story's crazy long, but by the end of it, the old man's like, "Man, I should give some of my stuff away." That's the lesson.
A little bit, not all of it, but
like, "Oh man, this kid with the broken leg, that's actually not a great situation. And I'm going to give him a few, you know, Merry Christmas."
Merry Christmas.
It's not complicated. It's been around for a long time. We have made so many versions of this story. We've made it with Bill Murray. We've made it with Michael Caine and the Muppets. A new one just came out with Ryan Reynolds. Whichever version of this story you want to hear, we've probably put it to music and tape and video and whatever format. You can read the OG book. And yet, everybody knows this story. It's hard to meet people who don't know A Christmas Carol at all, because it's not even particularly religious. It's not, you know, it's just a simple story about don't be greedy. The greediest man in town has a bad night on Christmas. He wakes up and he's not a jerk anymore. So if the whole purpose of that seems so obvious, how is greed still such a rampant problem across society when everybody knows the story? The lesson could not be more obvious. The most greedy man in the world knows who Scrooge is. It's not a mystery. There's a duck version. Yeah. What do you need? But it doesn't. If the purpose to retell the story is to continue to teach the lesson, but it seems like sink in at large.
No, and it's not going to sink in at large until more of us as individuals take ownership and agency of our own mind, body, spirit, our choice and our experience. So I'm going to share a couple dichotomies. And again, I share these through Choice Forward. This is what I do, but it links directly to what you're talking about in a really intricate way. So bear with me. Take you on this ride. All right,
please.
I believe that there is a bigger sense, the life inside us, right? Our mind, our body, and our spirit. And then there is the world at large. That's the thing outside us. That's what we created to try and make life better. Okay. So you follow me on that. Okay. Now imagine that everything, it doesn't matter what it is, my water bottle, every device you have, every routine you have, the cameras, the lights, they're all tools. Okay. Every thought we have is a powerful tool. And it has to be used with discipline and moderation for it to stay a tool. When we stop using it with discipline and moderation, it becomes a vice. Okay? Mm. And a vice is destructive to yourself and to your community. Same item can become either thing.
Right.
We created the world to make life better. But the world is stifling life because the world stopped as a whole applying discipline and moderation to its agency. But where did its agency come from? Us, from people. People have an incredible gift. It's called ambition. Ambition is one of our most powerful tools. But when ambition stops being applied and checked with discipline and moderation, ambition becomes greed. And greed, like a virus, has taken over humanity and now is what drives the agency of the world. That's the best way I can answer your question succinctly.
Are y'all listening right now? Are you listening to this conversation that we are having about this? I've asked this question to 600 people, not just on this show. I'm like the annoying guy at dinner who won't stop bringing up A Christmas Carol. And I swear I've never heard an answer that good. I'm not kissing ass, bro. That was the best answer to that I've ever heard. And so succinct and very specific.
Thank you.
I love that. It reminds me very, very clearly of a time. I'm going to forget who it was. I want to say it was Ice Cube, but he was talking about how words can be tools or weapons and it's about discipline. And I was like, that is almost exactly what you just said. Just using the knowledge, the way we apply it socially is a vice, but the way we communicate, it could be a weapon, same kind of thing. And I love that.
I literally go into these concepts in depth through my services. You know what I mean? And I do presentations, workshops, seminars on these concepts. To round it out, to make that really drive home, value and worth are the last two that I think really got to be put into this concept. Value being the assets, what we've now made important in the world, worth being your mind, your body, and your spirit, your mental health, physical fitness, your spiritual awareness, you. We are all so filled with worth and potential if we work at it. But most people feel worthless because they've forsaken their worth in the ideal of value. So I think we could have a better world if we put more worth into it and respected worth more. If we saw someone and was like, hey, man, you've got a lot of potential. How can I encourage that versus being fearful about what you'll do to maintain your value?
Yes.
So
absolutely. And Marcus, I deal with this all the time. I'm so happy to hear this perspective. I'll be more specific. So for me and my path, and this is part of why At the Elephants exists, anybody who's listening to this, I want you to know, if you haven't already figured this out after 90 something episodes, whatever, the purpose of me airing these conversations, as opposed to just calling Marcus up, which I'm sure he would make 10 minutes, 20 minutes to talk to me and say what's up, get to know each other. If I went out of my way, and he'd say the same thing when we cut, don't worry, he'd say the same thing. But the reason I publish it is because I believe that there might be value in what we talk about. I remember the conversations at the Elephants. I remember the conversations in the directing classrooms that I was in, the DMP classrooms I was in, design classes, where I'm having a conversation with somebody and maybe they're not even an authority, but the thing they say just, it just makes it make sense. It clicks. And I walk away with that forever, telling mm-hmm. everybody I meet, like, hey man, I don't know if you ever mm-hmm. thought about it this way. And right. the value of this is the hope that I perpetuate that. I've always had that sensibility. And since I left school, my main objective has been to try to move forward in whichever direction I think is most helpful and healthy for me in the future, but to try to grab as many people as I can along the way who are willing to kick their legs as well. And I think that this is where I'm getting with this. I've encountered a lot of people who are so grateful for that arm, that are so grateful mm-hmm. for that handout.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I've encountered maybe more people who swat it away and fall back in their own way, in their own patterns and systems that they know aren't helping them get the things they want or the things they need. And I would say my question to you is, you know, as you describe the world succumbing to the lack of discipline and the lack of focus and seeing that happen in such large numbers, I feel like your voice in this is so important, but there are so few people speaking the way you do, if I'm being honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
How do you maintain your gratitude and positivity and your perseverance, not just for yourself? Because with that, I can understand. We all understand how we keep on pushing for ourselves. No one should have to explain that. If you're struggling with it, I get it. But
understood.
How do you keep putting the hand out? How do you keep saying, let me bring you along, let me keep helping people, when I know they slap your hand away too, bro? Because there's not everybody's ready for that.
Absolutely. Oh, man. I was saying the same thing for years, and it took encouragement for me to keep saying it, because I started to like be like, well, I'll just not say it anymore. No one wants to listen. But if someone actually came up to me to listen, the amount of times they walked away telling me, man, that changed my life, straight up, that changed my life, I would be confused. Honestly, the amount of times that happened, I was confused. Like, I think they might be pulling my tail. So I would just toss it over my shoulder as just like, oh, a random off, and just keep moving. But now I see it so differently. And I realize this is how I've been dealing with that experience my entire life. Imagine that there is an ocean and the ocean is now rocky. It's a storm on the ocean and the waves are really intense. Most of us have gotten knocked overboard and we're scrambling in this ocean. Imagine that ocean is negativity, okay? I'm on a surfboard, and my surfboard is my mind, my body, my spirit, my worth. While I'm surfing, I can see other people have surfboards, but they aren't using their board. They haven't waxed their board in a long time, and they haven't worked on their core. So it's not easy to board. You don't just grab the board and stand up on it, especially when the waves are rocky. So I recognize a lot of people got to paddle first. Right. So every now and then I'll see a group of people, I'll get off the board and paddle over, because me just boarding around can be arrogant, if not scary, when you've been desperately clinging.
Yeah.
And also me boarding around could mean you just grab my board and pull me over. Right. So it's important to meet people where they are and share what I know. This is how you get on the board. Follow me. Let's use the momentum of this negativity to propel us forward so we get on the board. And now that same negativity that might have drowned us is actually pushing us to a new land. But not everybody's going to come with me.
Yeah.
And so I can't wait there or else I'll drown. So for everyone who's come, we're paddling, and now we're going. And I encourage them to do the same for the next set of people they cross on the ocean of negativity. Because that's what I'm going to do. And every time I leave one group of people, I make sure I'm conscious of my breathing. I'm conscious of re-waxing my board. I'm conscious of maintaining my core so that I don't come to the next group of people weaker. No, I come stronger, more prepared, more patient, kinder, more positive, and in search of solution.
I love that. And I think when you explain that process to me, first of all, I just love a good analogy. My brain works that way. It does. Some people don't. I really do. I really like, I can't even communicate well if I can't be like, it's like this. I love that analogy. And I want to say that I'm not even going to pretend to be naive about this. I'll just add on to, in that process, the one step that I think is maybe the hardest thing to teach someone how to do, because all those steps about getting off paddling yourself and that mentality, all of that stuff, I feel like you could practice that. But the thing that's hardest to practice in that whole thing is knowing the timing of when do you keep going and accept that this situation is going to drown you if you stay. And you only learn that from practice.
From practice. From literally getting pulled down and nearly it costing you everything and having to re-wax and take all the time to start over again and do it a few times. But I'm going to tell you, I don't shy away from that. And I don't want people to shy away from it. I think we've got to help each other, even if it hurts, learn from the hurt and keep helping. We won't have a better future if we don't, truly. So with that in mind, I'm really conscious that it's very hard for people to get the motivation to get back on the board, right? Mm-hmm. It's like our motivation is so stunted today because we've been tricked with incentives, right? It's like, oh man, like, why do I need to get back on the board?
Right. Well,
what is it going to get me? Like, who's going to pay me for it? So we've got to see the reason behind the choice, which I think is growth. I think we want to be on the board moving in a direction that is going to create stability, that's going to create cohesion, that's going to create synergy and imagination. Because that to me is growth. That's where creativity comes from. That's where the future should be headed.
I keep saying I love that and I got to stop, but it's true. It's coming from a natural impulse of honesty. I know I only have so much more time with you, so I'm going to jump a few questions ahead, take a few things for granted and ask you this last thing, my friend. In your opinion, and you please take your time on this if you need it, in your opinion, what is the quickest, most efficient way to convince a person that failure should be enthusiastically embraced and practiced rather than avoided?
Okay, I got this one for you, okay? Again, we're going to go back to a dichotomy. And the dichotomies are designed to make sure we stay focused on productivity and are moving in the direction we desire. So for me, the answer to your question lies in lesson versus barrier. Every single experience that we have and every encounter we have is an opportunity to learn. If we are not actively turning it into something that we learn from, then we are building barriers that will keep us from growing and from making more connection. When it comes to finding solutions to the next problem, the more lessons we learn, the more repertoire we have to pull from, the more agency of peace we have. But in turn, if we have not actively been trying to learn something, the more barriers we have built, the more trapped we feel, the more anxiety we have created.
I'm breathing that in for a second. Also, I kind of feel like the short answer is start gardening. A little bit, right? Because you're going to learn all that stuff you just said. You're going to learn it real quick if you start it. I'm not just pushing your business. I'm saying.
No, that's hilarious. You know, I want to follow that up with go put your hands in the soil and go learn from nature. Because for a lot of people, the idea of starting gardening means let me go find a bunch of stuff that's going to look pretty. And I got to water now. And then they're like, oh, now I'm done. You are hilarious, Rob.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time, Marcus. This is so fun. And honestly, I feel like I could talk to you for like 6 days, but I know your time is more expensive than I could possibly afford at this point. And God bless you for that. Go ahead.
Before I let you go, the last thing I actually am curious.
What did
you notice about my book, right? You mentioned that you had seen something online about my book. I'm super curious. What did you see and what did it make you think of in relationship to how, it, like little old me, I like to get some feedback.
Not a problem. Let's go ahead and let everybody know too, before we get into this, because we haven't fully dropped it and it'll be in the bio, which, you know, some people read and stuff. But your book came out about a year ago, right?
Yep. May 24th, it'll be a year.
And the full title for everyone?
How to Grow, Nurture Your Garden, Nurture Yourself.
So I'll tell you what I saw online. The title and the cover. And I judged it fully by that, which I heard you're not supposed to do. But so here's what I got. And I'll tell you, absolutely. I had no idea what I was getting into today because all I had was an email from Catherine with a couple of lines about what you've been up to. Clicked on the website, clicked on the Instagram and stuff. I looked very briefly at it. And what I saw was, for me, someone dedicated to, at this point, almost a cliche, tired expression, personal growth, a real thing that people seem to find fatigue about. And for me, on a very sincere level, I almost wish there were new words to it, which I think you're very on the verge to coining, sir. There needs to be a new language about that. It's one of my favorite things. It is the reason I'm very grateful to have gone to school of the arts. I was a kid who was raised by mechanics and farmhands, who was artistically inclined and had no guidance other than, like I mentioned before, high school teacher being like, I don't know, go to Stephen F. Austin University and then teach high school or something. I don't know. And I was like, but I think I'm really good at something. What do I do? I don't know. And to be on that path and also to be a terrible student for my entire career, but to feel an aptitude in another department and to be told over and over, well, that's not going to lead to anything because you're bad at this other thing. It set me off on a lifelong journey of, well, I need to define my own value or I should just give up because they're right. And that's too fast. So I have plenty of time to do other things. So let me figure it out on my own. And I had as we talked about before we start rolling, and now we're getting to the part where people are going to click off the interview because they've heard this. But I started in DMP. I wasn't even sure when I got to School of the Arts where I was going to be. And I ended up graduating from directing. And to me, one thing that I find interesting about doing this show, talking to a bunch of people who have gone to a conservatory, is especially the people who give themselves the room. And I try to give this to everybody I talk to who I feel like is not embracing it. The room to accept that life is so full. And it is, I live by the rule of abundance so, so strongly, and not scarcity. There is a lot out there for us. It is an ocean. There's room for all of us to learn how to surf together. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to cost you that much to slow down and help someone else get to where they want to go. And I am honestly enamored by the articulation in a more nuanced way that I've gotten from talking to you, but nothing you've said so far has surprised me based on what I thought before this interview, because I will say that your brand is out there exactly as I think you want it to be. And I felt like I already kind of knew you from about 2 minutes of research. I'm like, I know how to talk to him.
Awesome.
Because that message is really clear, bud. And I'm happy about that, because your message is a message I want so many people to hear. And I think you're a good voice for it too. And that's another problem with that message. It is, because I have that message, but I'm too acerbic. I curse too much. I have strong opinions about adults wearing Mickey Mouse ears. I don't think they should do that. But you know, I'm not for everybody. I think you might be. So I thank you. I thank you so much for putting it out there and working so hard.
Thank you, buddy. Literally, it has been a pleasure and a half. I didn't know much about you either from the short talk, but when it comes to alma maters, we went to a special one. So I knew that there was a good chance that we'd have a great combo just because of the caliber of people who I can call classmates. So thank you for taking your time, buddy. And I hope that you and the audience have a blessed rest of your day.
We'll go into now. Thanks, Marcus.